And you may have also seen that certain oils are advertised as cold-pressed, like cold-pressed olive oil, cold-pressed flaxseed oil, to let you know the company selling the product extracted the oil without the use of the chemical solvents and harsh processing methods. But the question is, does the extraction method really make a difference to our health when we use these oils for our salad dressings and to cook our food? That's the question.
What's up, my friend? Welcome back to the Legendary Life Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about something very, very popular on social media. What is that? Well, of course, you already read the title. You know what we're talking about. Seed oils. Have you heard this term before? Or is it just on social media that people are talking about this? Anyway, we're going to be getting into seed oils, what they are, the processing of seed oils. Do seed oils cause inflammation? Do cooking oils at high heat damage your health, and more? So if you have had these questions about cooking oil, about specific oils, especially the dreaded seed oils, well, we're going to get into that today. And let's just kick off by saying the consumption of industrial seed oils represents a new change for us because they've only been introduced into our diet recently. They're not foods that our ancient ancestors ate, as obviously modern processing methods didn't exist back then. But is that necessarily a bad thing? And like I said at the beginning, if you spent more than 2 minutes on social media, I mean, people go crazy over this stuff. They're saying, oh, sugar and seed oils are causing diabetes. It's the thing. It's the big food makes the seed. All this babble. So maybe I'm already showing my hand and you can already start to guess where I'm going to be going with this. But I will set aside my bias and we are going to dive into what the research says. Because if you want to know, if you want to know something such as, are seed oils dangerous to health or not, do you just ask Ed on Twitter? You know? Yeah, okay. I'm not gonna go off on too much of a tangent. But Ed on Twitter, or how about this? Why don't we do this? Why don't we design an experiment and give people seed oils, test their biomarkers before and after, look at all the research that's been done with various oils, and then make a conclusion from that. How about we do that? That's what I'm into. So that's what we're going to be talking about, because you already know what Ed and Bob think. All right. So because seed oils are one of the more complicated and confusing arguments for people to interpret, it's easy just to take Bob, the nutrition influencer's word for it, especially when he's like, I dropped 40 pounds. I mean, this is how I think these people talk, you know? I mean, look, I grew up in the South and, like, you know, I respect people regardless of their political affiliations, but I also lose respect for people based on their behavior. And so some of the people who act that way, I mean, I just... My eyes are rolling in case you can't hear them through the mic. They're making rolling noises. So to prevent you from becoming one of the many misinformed people, I'm here to break it all down for you. That way you can decide if you want to eat them or not. And that's what I try to do on this podcast. I'm not telling you, hey, listen to me. I'm the ultimate authority. I know everything. I don't. And guess what? Nobody does. But what I can do is we can look at the best evidence we have available to determine if cooking with these types of oils is really bad for you, is bad for your long-term health, or if there's a different story that maybe isn't being talked about. So we're going to get into it. And the first thing I want to say before we jump into describing this is, folks, I've been in this business for 23 years. I used to stay away from processed vegetable oils and what are now called seed oils. And I had a whole explanation as to why, which we're going to get into. Like, if you learn about the processing methods of modern oils, you're like, that's not something I should be eating. And that isn't untrue, by the way, but not for the reasons you may think. But again, I want you to think about that for a second. I've been in this business 23 years, and I didn't just learn one year and repeat it 23 times. I've gone to so many seminars, I've forgotten how many. I've interviewed over 400 experts on this podcast over the past 6 or 7 years we've been doing it. I'm at the top of my game, folks. I am not behind on things. I've never been more informed, never been better, more clear on what really matters and what doesn't. Now, that doesn't mean I know everything or that I have all the answers, but I want you to keep that in mind, especially when someone, well, I've been low carb for 3 years and I cut out seed oils and I cut out the carbs, right? And, you know, I finally lost them pounds, right? Look, I'm happy when people get results, but my job as someone who helps people get results is to tease out what is really causing them. What is really helping people? Is it really just cutting out the sugar? Is it really just cutting out the seed oils? Or is there more to the story? Because I can't afford to be sloppy with my claims. And not even with the claims, really, but I can't afford to be sloppy with my advice to my clients because I get paid based on results. I don't get paid as a loudmouth on social media. I think that's a really important point and a point where you got to watch out for influencers because people say things all the time on social media. It's like, well, do you actually work with people? Like, how many years have you worked with people? Where are the results that you've gotten with people? Or are you just a paid mouthpiece and you have a lot of followers and you say things on social media and, you know, but it's really from more of a theoretical perspective. And by the way, I like some influencers. I appreciate what they do. But sometimes we can find ourselves focused on very minute details because an influencer said something versus what someone like me or many of the other great coaches say. They're more focused on a practical approach and doing things that work for people. So I hope that's clear. The difference between coaches and influencers. So let's jump into it. What are seed oils? Well, the term seed oils is a term nutrition influencers use to refer oils that come from seeds, right? But the most common ones are canola, safflower, and vegetable oils such as corn and soybean. And one of the biggest arguments against these seed oils is that they're generally extracted from plants using chemical solvents. And then they're deodorized and refined to neutralize odors and taste because apparently they're pretty nasty if you don't do that. I don't know, but that's what I've heard. And I've never been to a plant. And to be honest, I don't eat this stuff that much. And you may have also seen that certain oils are advertised as cold pressed, like cold pressed olive oil, cold pressed flaxseed oil, to let you know the company selling the product extracted the oil without the use of the chemical solvents and harsh processing methods. But the question is, does the extraction method really make a difference to our health when we use these oils for our salad dressings and to cook our food? That's the question. A lot of things that sound terrible can turn out not to be a big deal. And one of the examples that comes immediately to mind is the microwave. Folks, I don't know if you know this. Of course, you don't know it because I don't think I've ever talked about it, but I didn't use a microwave for years because there was supposedly some research showing that cooking food with a microwave did terrible things to it. And then terrible things will happen to you because of the chemical changes that occur when you use radiation to cook your food, microwave radiation to cook your food. But since then, we found out, yeah, it's not really that big of a deal. So you may have also heard that seed oils contain high amounts of PUFAs, or polyunsaturated fatty acids, and that these polyunsaturated fatty acids, or PUFAs, are bad for your health. And you may have even heard doctors like Mark Hyman and influencers like Food Babe say that PUFA oils contain toxic chemicals and GMOs, and you should never eat these things. There's also a pharmacist named Denico Antonio. I think I'm saying it right. And if you're kind of hip to the different influencers out there, you know who I'm talking about. The salt, a guy who wrote a book about salt. And he rails against seed oils and PUFAs as well. So one quick but important point is that all oils, no matter what they are, no matter where they're from, are a combination of all the different fatty acids. So monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, and yes, even saturated fatty acids. So olive oil, for example, isn't pure monounsaturated fat, it just tends to have more of it in it. All right. But it's always a combination of these things. So that said, seed and vegetable oils tend to have higher levels of polyunsaturated fats, but it has the other types too, the monounsaturated and saturated. Following me so far? Cool. Can always go back and rewind it. So does this matter though? Well, we're going to get to that question as well. So let's jump into the first one. Does the processing of seed oils really cause health problems? And again, I want to remind you, I was deep into the chemicals are killing you line of thinking. All right. I was deep into the nutrition conspiracies and how there are people from big food who are also on the boards at companies in big pharma, which is true, by the way. But what I've come to learn is that there are many complicated relationships and many complicated things. And certainly not all conspiracy theories are just theories, but there's it's more nuanced than that. It's a lot more nuanced than that. Okay. Companies are really out to make money. And sometimes that leads them to doing things that are unethical and perhaps even dangerous to people. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's real life. But some of the other things, it's like, come on, they're, you know, so if you're a conspiracy nut, someone who believes in conspiracy theories, I'm probably not going to be the best influencer, the best person to listen to, because I'm going to challenge a lot of what you believe, because I really believe in challenging our beliefs about that. And I've changed a lot over the years. So let's start out by saying, yes, there are chemicals used in the processing of oil, such as hexane. In fact, I took organic chemistry in college, and I did some of these experiments. I made aspirin, for example, or salicylic acid. I don't think I did anything with cooking oils, but I may have. I don't really remember it. And yes, the finished product you buy off the shelf does contain some small amount of those chemicals, but we're talking really small. For example, and I want you to wrap your head around this number, or do your best to wrap your head around this number. Canola oil has 0.8 parts per a million per kilogram of oil. 0.8 parts per million per kilogram of oil. Whoa, it's so small, it's really even hard to visualize what that even means. So does this matter? And the answer is, we're not really sure, because that 0.8 parts per million per kilogram of oil is not an amount that will move the needle much, even if it does have negative effects on your health. Nor should you expect, on the other hand, to feel a big difference if you remove it from your diet. Now, here's the thing. I want to be very clear about this. I'm a person who wants to remove chemicals from my life. The toiletries, the things that I use on my body, I'm a big fan of this. It's just, I want to spend my energy where I'm going to really move the needle. I'm really going to get good health effects, because one of the reasons I got away from all what I call the conspiratorial nutrition nonsense is I didn't feel better. When I did all this stuff, I ate super organic, I did all these things, and I didn't feel that much better. It wasn't until I started realizing sleep was a big part of it, until I started realizing that my emotional problems were a big part of it. The fact that I started realizing the stress from not being financially successful, from being broke, in other words, from struggling to pay my rent every month, was having a much bigger effect on my health than the 0.8 parts per million per kilogram of canola oil that I was avoiding, right? I mean, it just didn't move the needle much. So if you're concerned about using chemicals in seed oils, you can always just buy the cold pressed version. Just understand it's more expensive But if you're not going to feel it financially, then go for it if it's important to you. However, if you're on a budget, I wouldn't spend the money on it. I would focus on other things. And that's really what health is. It's a game of where do I spend my attention, focus, money, effort? And what I would suggest to you, and these are, you know, a little bit of a tangent from what we're talking about, but not really. Focus on the things that are going to move the needle. So let's move to the next question. Do seed oils cause inflammation? Now, before we answer this question, I want to tell you that you probably heard, the modern diet has an abundance of omega-6 fatty acids, and omega-6 fatty acids cause inflammation, and because of something called arachidonic acid. And the more omega-6s you have, the more arachidonic acid you have, the more inflammation that you're going to have. This was what we believe. Now, this was in the paleo community, but it wasn't known as paleo. I was paleo before paleo was even a term. I mean, in the nutrition world, at least. Obviously, in the anthropological world, it's been a term for a long time. But in the nutrition world, I was paleo before Rob Wolf wrote his paleo book. And we called it ancestral eating, and I had cookbooks about it. I was sold that this was the idea to better health. And I do still think there's a lot of good ideas from that Paleolithic lens to look at things, but it can also get you, again, focused on things that don't really make a big difference for your health or in your life and take up your time, money, and effort. So seed oils and inflammation. And again, returning to the main argument was that the hunter-gatherer diet had less omega-6s and more omega-3s, which is true, by the way. That's a true statement. Now, the more contested point here is that this imbalance has led to higher levels of disease and inflammation for modern humans. I believe that. But since then, I've updated my stance. Why? Did I start getting paid? Am I a shill for big pharma, for big food who gets you sick and then their buddies at big pharma who sell you the drugs? No. I make money from coaching and from other things. I updated my stance on this because although there seemed to be good evidence for that argument, after looking at more recent studies that have looked into this in more detail and having conversations with guys like Alan Aragon and others, it appears that the link between omega-6s and poor health just wasn't as solid as once thought. Most of the more recent research done on humans, mind you, not in rodents or in petri dishes, hasn't found a strong link between the two. I will say that it's true that PUFAs are more commonly used in ultra-processed foods and that we're eating more ultra-processed foods than ever before. And there is also a correlation between chronic diseases that have risen in tandem with our PUFA / ultra-processed food consumption. In fact, more than 2/3 of all deaths are caused by one or more of these five chronic diseases. And what are we talking about? Heart disease, cancer, stroke, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and diabetes. And the additional statistics aren't great either. Chronic diseases are responsible for 7 out of 10 deaths in the US, killing more than 1.7 million Americans each year. And more than 75% of the $2 trillion spent on public and private healthcare in 2005 went toward chronic diseases. But here's the thing. Is that because of the PUFAs? Is that because the seed oils are responsible for the inflammation that's causing the diseases? Or is it something else? Here's what we know. Cells involved in the inflammatory process have high levels of polyunsaturated fatty acids. I already talked to you about the main one named arachidonic acid. This has led some people in the past to speculate, again, like I already mentioned, eating more polyunsaturated fatty acids in your diet will lead to higher arachidonic acid levels and therefore more inflammation. Here's the thing, though. The link between PUFAs and inflammation has never been proven. For example, a review of 30 randomized controlled trials published in 2017 found no connection between a diet high in PUFAs and inflammatory markers. 30 studies, a review, right? So someone might say, hey, there's this study that says this. So when researchers do a review, what they do is instead of looking at one study and taking it for like what is, you know, taking it as gospel, they'll look at like 20 or 30 studies in this case, and they'll compare the data of 30 studies. And so it's the highest level of trying to figure out, okay, does this really make a difference or not? Yes or no? And they found no connection between a diet high in polyunsaturated fatty acids and inflammation markers in human beings. And in 2019, a review of 30 cohort studies found that high levels of PUFAs called linoleic acid were actually associated with reduced heart disease. And then another review done in 2020 really squashed the idea that omega-6s or PUFAs cause inflammation and or disease. In fact, I want to read this quote from the study to you right now. The reason that omega-6 to omega-3 PUFA ratio seems unimportant in predicting cardiometabolic disease or inflammation is probably that concerns about this ratio are partly formed based on several incorrect and simplified assumptions. For example, that omega-6 polyunsaturated fatty acids overall are pro-inflammatory, that omega-6 polyunsaturated fatty acids have adverse effects on cardiovascular disease risk, and that reducing polyunsaturated fatty acids, in particular linoleic acid intake, will lower arachidonic acid concentrations. By contrast, linoleic acid supplements do not increase arachidonic acid concentrations in plasma or adipose tissue. Was that too, did I just totally lose you? Did your eyes glaze over or roll back in your head? Like what they're basically saying is like, look, people assume that if you just eat more omega-6s, or if your omega-6 to omega-3 ratio is off, you're going to have more of this arachidonic acid, and then the arachidonic acid is going to cause more inflammation. This is the line of thinking that I used to believe, by the way. So what they did is they tested it, and they even gave people acid supplements, linoleic. Let me restate that. I misstated that. They gave people linoleic acid supplements because that's the polyunsaturated fatty acid in particular that they believed would lead to higher inflammation levels, and then giving people a linoleic acid supplement doesn't increase arachidonic acid concentrations in your blood or in fat tissue at all. So it's people think of these mechanisms and it seems like well thought out, but then they test it and then it doesn't work. And that's, it's actually great because where we are with research, because I used to believe these mechanisms. Oh, it's so obvious. You eat sugar, sugar raises insulin, insulin's a fat storing hormone, therefore, you know, or carbs and carbs. So carbs make you fat because carbs raise insulin. Then we tested it and tested and tested. And we have more and more and more and more evidence. And the same thing is true of omega-6s or polyunsaturated fatty acids or seed oil. You have to say it in the creepy way because like that's kind of the vibe that people who believe in seed oils and the negative health effects of seed oils, that's kind of the vibe they give off to me. It's like seed oils, man, they're coming to get you. They're poisoning you. So it seems clear cut now that polyunsaturated fatty acids and omega-6s don't really pose any problems to our health, right? Well, unfortunately, there's just a lot of nuance and unknowns when it comes to nutrition. So in the case of seed oils in particular, a study done in early 2020 emphasizes how eating enough omega-3s, particularly DHA and EPA, is essential because of their anti-inflammatory properties. So this study suggests that a diet that is low in omega-3s isn't good for inflammation levels and therefore health. And since we have a limited number of calories that we can eat every day without gaining extra fat, which extra fat will raise your inflammation levels, regardless of whether you're eating seed oils or not, But getting your fat exclusively from omega-6 isn't a good idea. Now, that doesn't mean omega-6s are bad. It means going without omega-3s is bad, right? So while no research has ever isolated seed oils as the cause of any disease or a direct relationship with inflammation levels, you definitely want to make sure that you're getting enough omega-3s in your diet. That is something that we know can definitely improve inflammation levels. I guess I'm not sure about this, but irrespective of your body fat levels is the impression that I'm under. Sorry for not knowing everything. I'm not a perfect person. As I said, I don't know everything, right? I'm figuring a lot of this stuff out like you are. So I don't know. That is my opinion on the issue is that eating too many calories from ultra-processed foods is a bad thing, and a lot of ultra-processed foods has these seed oils in them. But if you're using them to cook or for things like salad dressing, it isn't going to negatively affect your health. Again, though, you have only so many calories that you can eat per day without putting on extra fat, and most people, 70% of Americans at least, are overweight or obese, so better off losing fat. So you want to make sure that you get in your omega-3s. And as a quick side note, most of these organizations recommend a minimum of 250 to 500 milligrams of combined EPA and DHA each day for adults. So that's usually around 3 grams or so of fish oil per day if you take a supplement. And make sure you read the supplement label to make sure you're getting the right dose. Again, that's 250 to 500 milligrams of combined EPA and DHA each day. Or if you want to get it from fish, eat at least 8 ounces of omega-3 rich fish every week. So let's move on to the next question. Does cooking oils at high heat damage your health? Now, this is a question that's taken me years to figure out. This is something I've always wondered about. And finally, I've been able to get more clarity on it. Cooking with oils isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it depends on a few things. For example, how often do you fry your food? Do you see or smell smoke from the dish that you're cooking with? Do you reuse your oils? My stepmom used to cook French fries, and then she'd pour the oil into, she used vegetable oil, cooked French fries. After the French fries were cooked, she'd pour the oil into some container and save it so that we would use it again when she cooked French fries again. I guess that was, I don't know, she was such a psycho, not to go off on a tangent. So I have no idea, was that because it made the fries taste better, or was that because she was trying to save money even though she redid her bathroom, one of our bathrooms, for $20,000. I don't know. She was pretty nuts. So off on a tangent here, but yeah. So we know that cooking oils to their smoke points, in other words, that point where you start to see or even a smell or see smoke, can form some compounds that might be harmful to your health. So interestingly enough, though, seed oils do have the highest smoke point of commonly used cooking oils. So canola oil, soybean oil. And if you avoid cooking seed oils to their smoke point and throw them out after using them, you should be fine. And of course, don't make fried food a staple of your diet. Did I really need to say that? Because I know I talk a lot about calories, how calories matter, total calories. But and that is the thing that most people should be focused on. But if you are at a healthy weight and you want to improve your food choices, looking at how often you eat fried food is certainly is a place of leverage if you want to improve your nutrition. Now, how much? I mean, is it going to stop you from getting cancer or heart disease? I mean, unfortunately, folks, we just don't know, right? There's so many contributors to these diseases, we just don't know. But it is worth trying and seeing if it makes a difference for you. Personally, I eat fried food I had some fried polenta the other day, and I feel pretty good. My joints aren't hurting that much lately, but I'm doing a lot of other things that are right. So it's really hard to tease things out, folks. I wish there were a more straightforward answer, but we're living in exciting times where we're starting to figure things out and we're starting to learn more. So hopefully you can find Hopefully you can be grateful of that as well. Let's answer the next question. Are seed oils bad because they're genetically modified? And I want to squeeze this in because it's quick. And I used to be firmly against GMOs and went down quite the rabbit hole in my late teens and early 20s on this. And there was a video from a kind of guerrilla news group called Guerrilla News Network, like CNN, but it was GNN. It was Guerrilla News Network, long since over, but they had this, well, I thought it was great at the time, this video that, you know, was so conspiratorial about genetically modified foods. And certainly, I should just come right out and say, I'm not really that concerned about genetically modified foods anymore. But a couple things here. One, I make fun of people who have that conspiratorial, very suspicious, almost skeptical, but really not that skeptical because they're not really looking at evidence. And, you know, there are a lot of the beliefs they have really like, I watched this YouTube documentary, right? You know, like that's okay, man. Okay. I'm not persuaded by marketing. I read research by boring scientists who don't make documentaries. Okay. They're just boring, but they just talk about the data. But I want to say this too, that I wouldn't go out of my way to buy genetically modified foods. And I'm also thankful that there is this group of kind of nutcases because I believe it's like a check and balance type of thing, right? Because we can't trust businesses 100%, right? Because why? Because businesses are run by people. And unfortunately, not everyone who is successful financially is also successful emotionally, you could say. And so we need to have some healthy skepticism. And I believe even the unhealthy skepticism of some of these conspiracy folks, I believe it's just provides an extra sort of balance to the system, if that makes sense. So, but I don't feel it's healthy to be one of them. Okay. And I don't believe what they say. Okay. But I just think it's just part of the spectrum of keeping the checks and balances here. So again, there's never been any credible research showing GMOs being harmful to our health. But I also want to add that while I no longer worry about GMOs, right? I still think that people that still talk about them like we did two decades ago aren't worth really listening to. Again, I'm glad that there's the checks and balances out there because the extremes help balance each other out, I believe, right? But again, just try not to end up there yourself. So at this point, you may be wondering, well, what oils am I supposed to cook with? Which are the best ones? Can you just give me some straight answers here? And I'll start off by saying we just don't know enough yet. Many factors, including your genes, will affect how your body metabolizes different oils. For example, I made a post on Twitter the other day saying, hey, limit saturated fat, which for most people is great advice. But some people also pointed out that, hey, you're talking about an isolated nutrient. Dr. Mark Bubbs, who will be on the podcast eventually, said, hey, you're talking about an isolated nutrient. I mean, don't put butter in your coffee, but if you're having it from I forget his example, but whole foods probably okay. And also, some people can eat a lot of saturated fat and it's not going to affect their cholesterol levels or triglycerides or anything else. So there's differences in our lifestyles, differences in our genes that are going to influence how our body metabolizes different oils. So the best advice I can give you is to use different types of oils and only use the smallest amount you need to cook with. Why would I say that? Well, because calories, of course. In fact, one of the common mistakes I see my clients making when I check their nutrition diary is adding a lot of added oils. And too many calories from oil will make you fat, folks, despite what low-carb crazies will tell you. Too much sugar, if it puts you over the calories that you take in per day versus how much you burn, will make you fat, and so will too many calories from oil. In fact, I said, added oils are the fat equivalent of added sugars. And I stand by that. So you don't want to be adding, and I say this because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, sugar's bad, but hey, I'm going to have this salad. I'm going to put all this olive oil on it. Oh my gosh, I feel with every bloop of the olive oil, with every bloop, that's the noise it makes, right? I'm actually getting healthier the more olive oil I put on my salad. No, you're not. It does have polyphenols and other things in it, but it's not a food that you want to add unnecessary amounts to. So use the least amount of oil that you can in cooking. In fact, folks, let me tell you something. I use water as much as possible. So that's something to experiment with. But if you're a person who's like, oh, fat doesn't make me fat. Here, let me pour in like a half a cup of oil or even a whole cup of oil. Yeah, stop doing that. Okay. And if you are going to cook with things, the best oil to cook with and to use on salads is extra virgin olive oil. But, you know, as far as the research is concerned, it actually doesn't, although it has a lower smoke point, it doesn't create a lot of those polar compounds that can negatively affect your health. But again, more isn't better. Reduce the amount of fat that you eat in your diet, added fats, okay? Or even fats from whole foods if you're looking to lose body fat. All right. So hopefully, I know this episode may have created a lot of questions too. And if you have those, you can hit me up on Twitter at TED_RYCE or at TED_Rice, my last name, spelled with a Y, not an I, and hit me up there with the questions. And in conclusion, what do you do with all this new info? Well, I want to make it super straightforward for you. Here are three steps that I recommend that you take action on today if you want to build a leaner, fitter, healthier body. So number one, what are your goals? Because you got to know what you want to accomplish so that you know what to focus on and what to ignore. So if you're trying to lose fat, then pay attention to the calories and protein and don't worry about anything else. And also, actually, there's one more thing, calories and protein, and of course, foods that help you with your hunger / satiety. That's the sciencey word for it, for being satisfied. And if you want some help with this, then listen to episode 445, The Most Effective Diet for Weight Loss with me, yours truly, Ted Rice. So if you're trying to lose fat, pay attention to calories, total calories that you eat per day, total protein, and making sure that you're choosing as many foods as possible from the satiety index, foods that help with your hunger. Now, step number three is, let's say that if you're already at a good weight, you're not looking to lose weight, you're already very lean, happy, and you're looking to optimize your food choices because you're already where you want to be body fat wise. Well, then pay attention to getting omega-3s and don't worry so much about the omega-6s so much. And also, reduce fried food in your diet and throw away oil after using it. Now, again, reduce fried food. I didn't say never to have it. I mean, I eat fried food every once in a while, but mostly I don't. But reducing it can help. And again, don't reuse oil. So those are the three steps to do. Know what your goals are, because like Lewis Carroll said, or the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there, or words to that effect. If step number two, if you're trying to lose fat, focus on the calories, protein, and satiating foods. Episode 445 from my podcast will help you with that. And then step number three, if you're already at a lean body fat level, then make sure you're getting enough omega-3s by either supplementation or eating that 8 ounces of fish a couple times a week, and reduce fried food in your diet and throw away oil after using it. So I want to ask you now, after listening to all this, what is your big takeaway? What is the one big thing that you can use from after listening to this entire episode? What are you going to do differently? Because that's what I want to know. I mean, if you're just looking for some things because you enjoy talking about nutrition and sounding intelligent at cocktail parties, there's nothing wrong with that, okay? You might find yourself in more arguments than conversations, especially with the low-carb dogma being so prevalent, but hey, whatever you're into. But as far as taking action here, what is the one thing that you can do? What is the one thing that's going to help you? And there is one more thing I want to mention. Be sure to incorporate plenty of healthy fats from whole foods in your diet. That should be another thing. So nuts, avocados, coconut, fatty fish are all excellent sources of healthy fats. In fact, nuts just have so much research showing positive health effects from eating nuts. Definitely incorporate nuts into your diet. This has a lot less to do with like, are you eating saturated fat? Are you eating sugar? And more about like, okay, so are you getting your sugar from a Starbucks Frappuccino, or are you getting your sugar from watermelon, which has a ton of crazy benefits in it? Or are you getting your fats from unnecessary added oils, even olive oil? Or are you eating nuts, which have a ton of research on how good they are for you? So those are some things to think about. And again, minimize calories from added calories, things that you're adding into your nutrition, into your diet because you think they're healthy, but they're just adding a bunch of calories. Get rid of those and listen to that episode 445 if you're interested in losing some fat. A couple other related episodes here is episode 444, The Truth About Fats, The Good, The Bad, and The In-Between with yours truly. And then episode 300, Little Known Nutrition Hacks to Cook Your Food for the Biggest Health Benefits. And that was with Alex Leaf. So that was episode 444, The Truth About Fats, and episode 300, Little Known Nutrition Hacks to Cook Your Food for the Biggest Health Benefits. That is it, folks. And just to kick it off and stay on this thing, on Friday, we're going to be talking about why I hate low-carb diets so much, because people reach out to me and like, hey, I don't feel like I feel like you're too dismissive of low-carb diets and fasting. And on Friday, I'm going to explain my thoughts on this a bit deeper. And that's what we're going to be talking about on Friday. That is it for me, folks. You want to keep the conversation going? Go ahead, reach out to me on Twitter, @TED_Rice. That's @TED_RYCE. Or reach out to me there. Let me know what you want to hear more of. Let me know what you thought of this episode. Let's keep the conversation going. And again, I will speak to you this Friday when I explain why I hate low carb diets so much. That's it for me. Have an amazing week. Love you lots. Speak then. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of the Legendary Life Podcast. If you haven't done so already, please take a minute and leave us a quick rating and review of the show on Apple Podcasts by clicking on the subscribe button on your left. Then write a sentence or two saying what you love about our podcast. Please be honest. Tell us what you think, what you'd like to hear, what we can change to make it better. It will support the show and help us to keep delivering life-changing information for you every week.